Oyez, 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 the Honorable Court of Appeals for the Third District of the State of Texas, sitting in Austin, is now in session.
Thank you. Y'all may be seated. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. We're glad to have you here today. Justices Theofana, Centriana, and I welcome you to the Third Court. The case that we have in front of us today is 0323735 CV, Design Tech Homes of Texas LLC versus John Simmons, and I apologize if I mispronounced this name, Vashti Simmons. If I could have announcements of ready counsels.
My name is Jennifer Taylor for the appellant, and I'm ready.
Thank you.
And I'm Bruce Bennett for the appellees, and Mr. Wood is on his way. We're ready to go forward.
I understand it. And even if Mr. Woods comes in during the argument, whatever y'all choose to do will be fine.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Councils, as you know, we are, and also good morning, Mr. Morgan. It's good to see you today. Good to have you here. As you know, we're broadcasting this on our YouTube channel. So all of your friends and family over the holidays, you can share your video of the YouTube channel if you so desire. We also have our time-keeping, very high-tech tool here. The green light means go, yellow means you've got 2 minutes, and red means you need to wrap up your thoughts. We're pretty much done. I think that's all. I know that for Mr. Bennett, if y'all decide to separate it, it's 13 and 7 on your side. But we'll typically go with 15 for you all and reserve 5 for rebuttal. Okay, fabulous. Then with that, Ms. Taylor, you may proceed.
May it please the court.
Yes, ma'am.
And opposing counsel. We're asking this court to reverse the trial court's order that denied Design Tech LLC's motion to compel this case to arbitration. There are three things in this case that are not contested. The first is that there is a written agreement that has been signed by the parties. The second thing that's uncontested is that that written agreement contains language that states that disputes about the construction of the home shall be submitted to arbitration, or shall be resolved in arbitration. And the third thing that is not contested is that this is a dispute about the construction of the home.
And is it also uncontested? I want to be clear on this. It looked like in the briefing that there is no contest that this is mandatory venue in Collin County.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I thought that is uncontested.
Yes,
okay,
Your Honor.
Thank you. All right.
The homeowners are seeking to render the arbitration agreement meaningless. And they're doing so by arguing that it is ambiguous and contains irreconcilable conflicts. And they have four primary arguments that I would like to address today. First, they argue that there was no meeting of the minds to submit the case to binding arbitration. Second, they argue that because the arbitration agreement gives the parties options on which arbitration service to use, that creates an irreconcilable conflict and renders the agreement unenforceable. Third, they argue that Design Tech materially breached the agreement by filing the lawsuit and alleging facts that they say violate confidentiality. And finally, they argue that Design Tech waived arbitration due to the 8-month gap between the filing of the original petition and the filing of the motion to compel arbitration. And I would like to start by dispensing with the waiver argument first. So under existing Texas law, waiver by litigation conduct has two prongs. It has substantial invocation of litigation and prejudice. And the record here shows neither of those elements have been met.
And you still think prejudice, even when you've got FAA and you've got the, I believe it's, is it the Morgan case from
Morgan
the United
v.
States Supreme Court? Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. So Morgan v. Sundance does announce a rule for federal courts. In that case, this was a 2022 U.S. Supreme Court case that said that the lower federal courts may not, and I'm going to quote from the opinion, it says, create arbitration-specific variants of federal procedural rules like those concerning waiver. And that rule does conflict with the Perry Holmes case. And the Perry Holmes case, of course, says that waiver is required. Now, as we stand here today, Perry Holmes has not been overruled or revisited by the Texas Supreme Court. So that case is still binding on the Third Court of Appeals. That prejudice is still required to prove waiver by litigation conduct. Yes, Your Honor. But we don't really even have to get to prejudice in this case, because before we get there, the homeowners had to prove that Design Tech substantially invoked litigation. And there is no evidence of that in the record. They have not shown that here. The homeowners characterized this as an 8-month delay. But what happened was there was an original petition filed in November of 2022. And it took 5 months to get the homeowners served with process, and they appeared in the case 5 months later in April. And the motion to compel was filed 3 months after that. So really, this should be characterized as a 3-month delay. And in those 3 months, the only activity that occurred was a voluntary mediation between the parties. There was no litigation activity whatsoever. No discovery was exchanged. There was no motion practice. There was not a scheduling order entered. No trial date had been set. So the case was very early on. Nothing had occurred. I do want to go ahead and discuss prejudice, because that is still a requirement. If you were to find substantial invocation, they must also prove that the delay caused prejudice. And there was no evidence offered in front of the trial court of prejudice. What they are relying on instead is the simple fact that the original petition had been filed and alleged bad acts. It alleged facts that they say violate confidentiality, accuse them of fraud, and that would otherwise be defamation. Prejudice in the context of waiver versus litigation requires harm suffered as a result of not filing for arbitration sooner. And Texas law, both the federal statute and the Texas Arbitration Act, both contemplate parties being able to file a lawsuit in order to enforce an arbitration agreement. Even if Design Tech had filed their original petition and simultaneously requested that the case also be compelled to arbitration, that lawsuit would still be on file, those facts would still be alleged. So the prejudice that they are offering is not something that occurred as a result of the delay. In addition, there has been no Texas cases that I could locate that named bad acts and the public nature of a filing as prejudice. Prejudice typically are things such as the expense in having to go through litigation, having to defend motions, having to exchange discovery. If you're responding to discovery requests and the other side would not have been entitled to that information in arbitration, or you've won a motion, you've been successful on the merits of a partial motion for summary judgment, and all of a sudden the other side is yanking this forum out from under you and forcing you to start over. Those are the kinds of things that are prejudice as a result of the delay. We see nothing like that here in this case. I want to go ahead and move on to some of their other arguments. They argue that there has been no meeting of the minds in this case to submit this dispute to arbitration. But that argument is belied by the language of the arbitration agreement itself. So I want to read to you a couple of provisions. This is going to be on page 91 of the clerk's record. That's where you'll find paragraph 5.5A, and that's our arbitration agreement. Starting with the third line down.
Go ahead.
Okay, starting with the third line down, it says that disputes such as this one shall be resolved in accordance with and by following the dispute resolution guidelines set forth in the, and then it names the ACES warranty, the Federal Arbitration Act, and or the Texas Arbitration Act. It says that any demand or claim for arbitration shall be submitted to either the American Arbitration Association or the or JAMS, the Judicial Arbitration and Mediation Service, I believe what it stands for. And those are the two different arbitration services the parties may choose from. And then further down towards the bottom of that paragraph, it does state that the parties may mediate before going to arbitration. However, quote, if the dispute is not resolved by mediation, then the arbitration proceeding shall continue to conclusion. So this is the language from the contract and the arbitration agreement that sends this case to arbitration, and that language is unambiguous and clear.
Okay. And counsel, I mean, y'all can't even agree on what the standard of review is. What happens in this case if y'all can't agree to which of these methods you choose, which arbitrator you choose, whether you go the FAA or ACES or the Texas Arbitration Act. I mean, I'm seeing such a conflict between the parties, it seems, and again, standard of review, you can't even agree on that. I don't know where the parties go.
So in this case, we have an arbitration agreement that says the parties may choose between two potential arbitration services. And we have not yet made it to a position where the parties have even discussed that. There was no evidence offered before the trial court that the parties had tried and had failed to come to an agreement on which service to use. And Texas law in the Texas Arbitration Act, and I believe also in the Federal Arbitration Act, there is a mechanism in the statute that does allow the judge to resolve those types of disputes. And in fact, I believe one of the cross points raised by the homeowners is they are requesting that the trial court appoint an arbitrator if this case goes to arbitration.
Going on that segue, how do you reconcile the mandatory language of 4.6A, which shall require claims to be sent through ACES, and the section 5.5A, which you just read, which says shall the language requiring claims to be submitted to either the AAA or JAMS?
So I look to the very last sentence of 4.6A, which says that this is in no way intended to limit, restrict, or otherwise affect any other dispute resolution mechanism or procedures provided in this agreement. And in Appley's briefing, they have, I don't want to say admitted, that might be a strong word, but they've agreed essentially that this language makes this arbitration, or makes the warranty provision subject to the arbitration agreement. And so the way that you harmonize those is there is a third-party warranty in this case, and disputes should be submitted via the third-party warranty. However, via that last sentence, that is going to be subject to the dispute resolution paragraph, which requires disputes to go to arbitration and not litigation. And paragraph 5.5A even contemplates that by saying that the guidelines to be followed in the dispute resolution arbitration will be found in either the ACES warranty, the Federal Arbitration Act, and or the Texas Arbitration
Act. Walk me through this. So if I'm a party to this contract, am I supposed to go through ACES, file through ACES, or am I supposed to file through JAMS or AAA?
If you are a party to this contract and you are initiating a dispute, you would have in that situation a choice. You can go through ACES because the contract allows you to resolve your dispute through the third-party warranty. If that fails to resolve your dispute, or if you choose not to, you can initiate arbitration. But what you cannot do is go to court and seek a jury trial.
Counsel, what would you say are the essential terms of the agreement to arbitrate here?
The essential terms of this agreement to arbitrate is to forego litigation and submit to binding arbitration. And those are the only essential terms. Who the identity of the arbitration service, whether or not the rules in the warranty or the guidelines in the Federal Arbitration Act or the guidelines in the Texas Arbitration Act, those are not material terms. And in fact, both the Federal Arbitration Act and the Texas Arbitration Act are going to apply in arbitration. And that's not because the contract says so, that is because the Federal Arbitration Act is a part of Texas law as well. And so the law says that both of those statutes will apply. And to further discuss some of the ambiguity arguments, there was additionally an argument made about the word and or. And just to kind of briefly touch on that, the word and or is not going to invalidate the entire contract. It is simply an acknowledgement of the fact that, as I said, if you are resolving the dispute via a third-party warranty, and under the warranty that's, you know, you make your warranty ticket, someone comes out and looks at the home, they inspect it, you see if you can resolve it that way, in more informally, or you send it to a more formal binding arbitration. And depending on where you're at, which stage you're in, then different guidelines may be applicable. And that is simply the contract's acknowledgement of that. I see that I am almost out of time, so I'm gonna quickly discuss material breach. The homeowners have claimed that Design Tech has materially breached the contract by filing suit and alleging bad acts, alleging that they committed bad acts. I briefly mentioned this before, but there's no Texas cases that we've been able to find that have excused a party from arbitration for this reason. And in fact, there are many cases on waiver law that state that filing a lawsuit in and of itself is never going to be enough to waive litigation. And so the homeowner's theory, their material breach theory that they are offering is in conflict with waiver law. We are asking this court to view this issue under the rules of waiver, not the rules of material breach. In summary, Design Tech offered an valid and enforceable arbitration agreement, and the homeowners have offered no reason why that agreement should not be enforced as written. And so we are asking this court to reverse the trial court's order compelling, denying the motion to compel arbitration. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Bennett, it looks like you're on your own, sir.
I think I am.
Yes, sir. And I am sure that you can handle Mr. Woods and yours.
Give it my best shot, Your Honor. Okay, let's start with, may it please the court. My name is Bruce Bennett, and I'm glad to be here on behalf of the Simmons. Let's start with waiver. What constitutes waiver is a fact-dependent inquiry. To decide if waiver occurs, the Supreme Court has directed us to look at several factors. No one is dispositive, but courts have denied arbitration based on one of these factors. Well, these factors include, first, is the movement a plaintiff or a defendant? Well, here, Design Tech is the plaintiff. Design Tech made no mention of arbitration in its petition. It didn't attach the contract to its petition. Did the movement know of the arbitration clause? Of course they did. They drafted it. It's their contract. It's got all these arbitration and mediation and God knows what else is in there. No claim that they were unaware of the arbitration agreement when they filed this lawsuit. How long did the movement wait before seeking arbitration? And is there any excuse for the delay? No. Design Tech waited 8 months, gave the trial court no excuse for the delay, none. It was not necessary. They did say, I think at the hearing before Judge Waldrop, that, well, you know, we had to file a lawsuit to initiate arbitration. That's not true. Perry Helms says that's not true. We know that's not true. You can go, you don't have to file a lawsuit first. Now they said, I heard them say today, well, it took us 5 months to get you served. Really? The burden of diligence is on them. I'm getting someone served. Did the movement seek a judgment on the merits? Yes, they did. They sought a judgment on the merits. Did the movement file claims, affirmative claims for release in the court? Yes, they did. They asserted claims for foreclosure of a lien, misapplication of trust funds, breach of contract,
violation of the Texas Prompt Pay Act. Were those claims subject to arbitration? Yes, they were. But they still filed the lawsuit. Now, the Fifth Circuit has said that the act of the of a plaintiff in filing suit without asserting arbitration constitutes substantial invocation unless an exception applies. Well, exceptions include the plaintiff files the suit to obtain a threshold declaration on whether a valid arbitration exists. It didn't happen here. Plaintiff sued to obtain injunctive relief pending arbitration. Nope, that didn't happen here. Plaintiff sued without knowing of the arbitration agreement. Nope, didn't happen here. Plaintiff filed suit to compel arbitration. No, they didn't do that either. So no exception exists. They've offered no excuse because none exists. As pointed out in a recent case, the Dallas excavation case, I say recent, it was decided in August. It's reported at 697 Southwest 3rd at page 702. No petition was filed in the case. It's Dallas excavation versus Orellana. And they said, parties know how important it is to settle on a forum at the earliest possible opportunity. And the failure of either one of them to move promptly for arbitration is powerful evidence that they made their election against arbitration. Now, intent is a question of fact. And the trial judge could reasonably have found that DesignTech intended to litigate its claims against the Simmons in court rather than seeking arbitration. Let me next turn to, unless the court has any questions on that, I'll go on.
I did want to ask you about the prejudice aspect of this.
Yes.
How was prejudice argued in this?
Yeah, I'm heading that way, Your Honor. Well, in the contract that we have, the loss, it talks about one of the benefits of arbitration. It says this in the contract, is confidentiality. You can keep this dispute confidential. Well, we lost that. They filed a lawsuit accusing us of misapplication of trust funds exceeding $500. That is a third-degree felony. Can't unring the bell. They brought us into court, and they made that. That is prejudice. We lost the very benefit of arbitration, one of the benefits we were supposed to get that they even put in their contract.
What about what counsel for the appellant says, that you have to tie the prejudice to the delay? Mm-hmm. But do you agree with that concept?
I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I think that prejudice can be, it can be the prejudice, you know, was caused by the delay, but it can be other things. I mean, here where you say in the contract, let's go to arbitration because you know what, we're going to keep all this confidential. And that's right. Mediation's confidential. Arbitration's confidential. Well, we lost that right out of the bat. And I think that does show prejudice. And I cited to the court a federal district court case, Rajal versus Murphy. It's cited at page 50. And the court there said, the court agrees that Murphy has been prejudiced by the public filing of the highly charged allegations accusing her of tortious and even criminal conduct. Now, if an agreement to arbitrate existed, DesignTech breached it by filing this suit and deprived us of the benefit of confidentiality. I believe, Your Honor, I'll next go now to the meeting of the minds. Hold on just a second. Sorry. Okay, meeting of the minds. Whether there was a meeting of the minds is a fact issue. And here, they did not request findings of fact and conclusions of law, so it is implied that Judge Waldrop found there was no meeting of the minds. And Chief Justice asked a good question. Who chooses? We've got all these various mechanisms. The agreement incorporates any other dispute resolution mechanism under applicable law. Well, that gets us into Chapter 151, where you have many trials and all these things that could have happened. Who chooses? Well, there is no way to choose. The agreement does not prioritize which one takes precedence over the other. There's nothing in the agreement that gives them the exclusive right, DesignTech, the exclusive right to choose what form of alternative dispute resolution we're going to proceed, and what procedures and what mechanisms and guidelines are going to be used. They don't have that right. The agreement doesn't give that right.
So, counsel, if this had gone a different direction and they had chosen not to file a lawsuit but had sought arbitration, let's say, utilizing JAMS.
Right.
How would the fight, would there have been a lawsuit by your clients in the trial court saying they can't choose? Mm-hmm. How would it have?
I guess we would have had to come into court on that to get that determination from a, okay. from the trial judge would be my guess. Had they gone that route,
mm-hmm.
We would have said, now wait a minute. We would have preferred another way. Okay. Or we could have said, you know, look, when you look at all of it and you look at and you try to reconcile all these different provisions, what I think it showed was there was an agreement to agree after a dispute arose that we'll decide all these things, Your Honor, just what you were raising. Those will be that. But there is no pre-dispute agreement to go to binding arbitration. And the practical construction of the parties was we can go to the court. They went to court. We went to court. And only then did they say, oh, wait a minute, we want to go to arbitration. But this agreement, the only way I could reconcile it, Your Honors, was that way, that there is no pre-dispute agreement to binding arbitration. Once the dispute arises, the parties are supposed to try to agree on a mechanism.
Mr. Brennan, can we move to what I had asked Ms. Taylor about?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
You know, y'all are arguing that 4.6A and 5.5A
yes.
are inconsistent, but what is your response to Ms. Taylor's position that you can go through ACES and third-party warranty, and if that doesn't mm-hmm. work, then you can go ahead and file arbitration with either AAA or JAMS?
Well, the problem we have with it, Your Honor, is that, again, the ACES warranty relates to construction of the home. So it covers everything that's in this dispute. And it says it shall be submitted to the American Construction and Education Services, ACES, for administration and resolution. And then it does have the exception that was pointed out. And you go down to 5.5A, and it says, well, this shall be resolved in accordance with one of the following guidelines. And you got three choices there. And then that has an exception in 5.5E, that these procedures shall in no way be construed to limit or otherwise affect any inspection and dispute resolution prescribed in any applicable statute. So, again, I don't think there is any set form on how this can go pre-dispute. Post-dispute, I think the parties could have come to some agreement. If they can't, they left open the option of court. They never excluded, litigation. It's not in there from their deal. It is. These are all options that they can pursue to seek dispute resolution, but they always left open the option of coming to court, and that's exactly what they did. And when you look at it, I think Judge Waldrop, again, we have to all fact findings are implied in favor. He thought, this is one that there is no agreement to agree. And if there was a waiver here.
What about your letter, y'all's letter in December, sending notice that mentions arbitration, mediation and arbitration?
Right. I think everyone knew it was available, but it wasn't mandatory. It wasn't binding, Your Honor. That's the key point. It's got to be, is there an agreement for binding arbitration? No, there's not. There's an agreement to consider arbitration as one of many alternative dispute resolutions, but it's not a binding agreement.
It's just an odd use of Mr. Bennett of the words shall be submitted and shall be resolved
right.
in a contract to take it to a place of not binding and optional litigation.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you reconcile those words?
Shall be submitted and shall be resolved.
Right.
Again, I think, Your Honor, the ACES, and again, they didn't put the ACES guidelines or anything in the record. We don't have it. But I'm assuming they have their own set of guidelines, their own set of rules, and that would be different from the rules in JAMS or the guidelines in under the, or Texas Arbitration Act. I mean, it says dispute resolution guidelines follow in accordance with guidelines in the ACES, Federal Arbitration Act, or the and or the Texas Arbitration Act. And again, I think there are different procedures, but we don't really know because they didn't put this, again, they had the burden to come in and prove all this, and they didn't do it.
And counsel, on the meeting of the minds argument, Justice Theofanis asked your opposing counsel about the material terms of the contract, and she articulated forego litigation and go to arbitration are the only material terms, not the methods or the rules.
Right.
What do you say to that?
I say there was never a meeting of the minds to forego litigation. That's the key point here. They kept that open, Your Honor, always. And I just can't stress it enough. I mean, I don't think they've tried to say today, I haven't heard the words today, that this is an unambiguous agreement. No way, no how. It's ambiguous. And the highest, I think this court has said it a long time ago, but the Supreme Court as well, that the and when you have an ambiguity, the party's practical construction of that agreement is the highest evidence of what the intent was. The highest evidence of the intent was they went to court and we went to court. We both recognize we can go to court. I mean, we could still, I guess, suppose try to resolve it by arbitration, but we don't have the benefit of confidentiality anymore. They brought us into court. They made these charges of criminal fraud, a felony against us, and I think we have to clear our names in court. If you'll give me 1 second to review my notes. I think I've said just about everything I wanted to say. If the court has any more questions.
Is there any fight remaining on the issue? And it's unclear to me. I heard when we first started, the parties do agree that this is mandatory venue in Collin County. So that's that venue battle.
And Comal.
I mean, Comal. My apologies. No, let me go get to another county. My apologies, Comal County. I don't want you to get north of Dallas.
Right.
But the selection of the arbitrator.
Right.
If we agree that arbitration is required, what do you say about that continuing argument?
Well, yes, we would say if we have to go to some form of arbitration, then we would request that Judge Waldrop get to make that call. Given all the contradictory and inconsistent provisions in here, and there's nothing about, again, which takes priority, who gets to choose, no one has the exclusive right. We think in that situation, which we hope we don't get there, but if we do, that the judge be allowed to make that call. So unless the court has any other questions.
One more question.
Sure.
So how important is it that we consider only arguments that were made before the trial court?
Well, under, as my memory of appellate law is an appellee, we can make arguments that were not made at the trial court that are supported by the record, which I think we've made. I don't think we strayed from that. I believe as the appellant, they are restricted to the arguments they made before Judge Waldrop. But again, I don't think we are, as an appellee, we're not restricted in that manner. And I think everything we have said in our brief is supported by the record and is said here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. All right. And thank you for giving the court time back. We appreciate that. All right. Counsel, yes. Yes, Ms. Taylor.
Your Honors, I want to start by addressing this fact issue versus law issue. The only evidence submitted before the trial court was the document that was signed by the parties. There were no fact questions submitted. And there was an issue raised about the authentication of the document. We filed our business records affidavit. The only issues before the trial court and now before this court is how to interpret and what to make of the language within the four corners of that document. That is a legal issue. And that issue is reviewed de novo. And if you look at the recent Baby Dolls versus Sotero case, whether a valid enforceable contract was created is a question of law. That is a legal question. Similar to, in the same vein of the fact versus law question, my colleague makes much of the fact that we did not attach the warranty document to our motion to compel. A couple of responses to that. The first one is that our original petition sought unpaid money damages under the contract. A warranty, a third-party warranty, addresses construction defects. Our claim was for unpaid money. That would not have been a claim that we would have made under the warranty. It was not until the counterclaim was filed that construction defects became an issue. And when our burden, and I'm going to point to, it's cited in my brief, but in the Ridge Natural Resources case out of the 8th Court of Appeals, our evidentiary burden was to put an arbitration agreement signed by the parties into the record. And once we did that, once we authenticated that document, the burden shifts to the other party, to the non-movement, to raise a fact issue or a legal issue as to why that arbitration agreement is unenforceable. If they contend that the warranty document creates an irreconcilable conflict in how this dispute should be resolved, they had the burden to put the warranty document into evidence. The homeowners received the warranty document when they closed on the home. And that's reflected in the contract.
Ms. Taylor, can you address Mr. Bennett's argument about their prejudice, and not as to whether they need to, you know, require under Morgan or not, but as to the loss of the confidentiality?
Yes, Your Honor. So the case that I heard my colleague mention just a moment ago is the Raju v. Murphy case. That is a case out of the Southern District of Mississippi. So right off the bat, what I stated earlier, that there is no Texas cases that have ever held this to be a basis of sufficient prejudice in Texas, stands. And I've read the Raju v. Murphy case, and it is true that there is language in that case that says that the highly charged nature of the allegations went into the court's consideration when deciding prejudice. But there was more to it than that. In that case, the court was convinced that the movant had essentially committed a fraud on the court. There's a ton of bad acts by that movant that was addressed in that case. In particular, the movant had lied about the non-movant's residency because he was trying to avoid diversity jurisdiction. And then once the case ended up in federal court, now he wanted to move for arbitration. He had attached the contract to his petition, but had apparently redacted the arbitration agreement out. And so there was more to that case than simply filing a lawsuit that alleged bad acts. And you also have to look at Texas law that says that in the context of waiver, filing an original petition can never be substantial invocation of litigation, that alone. And if it can never be substantial invocation of litigation, how can it also be prejudice? Texas law always ties that prejudice back to the delay. And I have about 45 seconds left, and so I do want to address my colleague's argument that the arbitration agreement does not waive trial by jury, or does not state that the parties are giving up litigation. And the language of paragraph 5.5A that states that disputes shall be submitted to arbitration, shall be resolved in arbitration, that is language that gives up the right to go to court and the right to seek a trial by jury and to have a jury resolve this case. And any other construction of that agreement and the surrounding provisions would render the entirety of 5.5A meaningless, which Texas law does not allow. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you both for presenting the case today. And this case will be submitted, and the court's going to stand in recess. Thank you very much.